OTB GAA.
You don't just have a speech the Wednesday before a game. You go out and you rile up your team and go out and play the match with fire and brimstone. Now you analyse teams to death.
Subscribe to the OTB GAA podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. OTB AM with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now.
I'm delighted to say Jonathan Wilson is with us. Jonathan, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
We're trying to make sense of what happened with Manchester City last night. Are they now the automatic favourites for this competition, given that they've unleashed in Europe exactly what they wanted to do? Or is this just a result and the next round will be totally different?
I'm going to give you the cowardly answer and say both. I think they're already probably the favourites. I think Napoli are the team playing the best football in Europe. But Napoli have never been to the quarterfinals of either the European Cup or the Champions League. So it's completely new territory for them. City, I think, in a season when a lot of top clubs have, maybe because of the World Cup, maybe for other reasons, have struggled. I think City were the favourites anyway. The ease with which they dispatched Leipzig in the end, I think it's huge to their credit and obviously bolsters those credentials. However, we have seen them win games very comfortably before, and then they slip up. And I think my feeling with last night's game, I suspect, is different to a lot of people's, which is that, yes, Haaland's goal scoring was amazing. The De Bruyne, I thought, was excellent. John Stones, I thought, had a great game at right back, moving to midfield. And actually, to be honest, the Haaland issue, we knew he was a brilliant goal scorer. I'm not sure it taught us that much more. De Bruyne returning to form, I think, is more significant. Stones being able to play that sort of tucked in fullback role, I think, is potentially more significant. But actually, for me, the most important thing is that of the five Haaland goals, four of them came from corners. And City are not a team you would previously... I mean, okay, one of them a penalty following a corner, but four corners essentially leading to goals. City are not a team you previously would have thought of as being strong from set pieces. So if they have that extra, that extra arrow in their quiver, then that's a very, very positive thing for them in tighter games going forward.
One of the points I was making earlier on in the programme was that he also just picked the obvious team, which has not always been the hallmark of Pep Guardiola in the Champions League.
Yeah, the obvious team, and yet he was still able to leave out Foden and Mahrez, which tells you how great their squad is. And I think one of the problems City have, one of the features of City is their squad is so good that there is not really an obvious team. This was one of multiple obvious teams. But it wasn't tricksy. It wasn't over clever. But even then, we say that, and you're right. You didn't look at that team and think, oh, Christ, what's he done here? Mm-hmm. But it was four centre-backs across the back. I mean, okay, John Stones is not a Tony Pulis-style centre-back. But that's interesting that a coach who sort of 3 or 4 years ago, you just said his ideal team would have been 10 full-backs and a goalkeeper. Suddenly picking a team with no fullbacks, he's redefined the role of a fullback to such an extent that they're no longer fullbacks. We are continually seeing that evolution.
Sorry, that's an excellent point. I guess I meant that he picked Gundogan and Rodri and a front three. So he managed to fit De Bruyne and Silva and Haaland and Grealish in the team, and it looks like that shape is perfect. But to go back to the four centre-backs, is this going to be them for the rest of the season, do you think? Or what's behind that? Was it is he disciplining Kyle Walker at the moment for his off-field activities? Or is there it just he thought that was the right thing to do against Leipzig?
I think Walker's form has not been great since the World Cup. So I think it's probably a combination of, he's not playing particularly well, plus the off-field stuff. Left-backs, he's got Gomez, but very inexperienced. And he doesn't actually have any left-backs because he sold them all. He sold Zinchenko and then sold Jack Cancelo for whatever reason in January. So to an extent, maybe this has been forced upon him. But I thought the way Stones played that role, he obviously doesn't have a pace of Walker. He doesn't get forward quite in the same way that Walker does. But I think one of the things Guardiola really wants, one of the reasons he needs his fullbacks to tuck into midfield and become a a holding midfielder when in possession, is he's paranoid about getting caught on the break. And whenever things go wrong for City, it's because they've got caught on the break or because they've overcomplicated things by trying not to be caught on the break. If Stones can fulfil that holding midfield slash fullback role, then that, I think, helps counter that fear. The one thing I would say about last night's game, look, I mean, 7-0, you can't pick holes in it, really. But they did get three big refereeing decisions went their way, which set the tone for the game, and then Leipzig sort of fell apart. So
I don't think that's nothing, by the way, because they were like, so everybody's like, oh, it was an overwhelming body of evidence to suggest they were going to win the game. There was, but in all the games that they've lost, they've missed a load of chances early on, and something has kind of inside them gone, oh, this isn't going to be our night, a constriction around the throat, and all of a sudden we're like, oh, Pep overthought it again.
Yeah, and even the first game in Leipzig, very, very comfortable first half. Yeah, if you had a criticism in that first half, it was they weren't ruthless enough. It was, they had Leipzig rattled and they didn't really sort of go for it. In the same way I criticised Bayern in the first half, in the first leg against PSG, that I think a really, really, really good team recognises when the opponents have lost it and kills them off for two or three goals then. And City didn't do that, and Leipzig were much better second half. I mean, I don't want to make too much of refereeing decisions because I think Henrikx was incredibly unfortunate with that handball. But having said that, he got away with a blatant handball in injury time in the first leg. The way Haaland clipped the keeper as he closed him down in the build of a second goal, I'm not sure that is a foul, but it is something you do see getting given as a foul sometimes. So, again, I don't want to say that it's a horrendous decision, but it's a big decision that went their way that might not have done. I actually think the one that they really got away with was Edison.
Yeah.
Who was it? He clattered. But I mean, that was keepers do get away with that kind of thing, but that was a bad challenge. And whether he brushed the ball or not, he's absolutely clattered through the man. And yeah, you think back, the Liverpool City game where there was a, I mean, we're talking, 4 years ago now, the 5-0, when a very similar incident, essentially a collision, two players running together, and it was Mane got sent off in that situation, wasn't it? But, I think there's a recklessness to that challenge that could easily have been a red card another night. So, once they got ahead, once Leipzig started to wobble, City were absolutely brilliant, absolutely ruthless. And as I say, I think the set plays issue is a big thing, and Stones' issue is a big thing. But I'm not sure it was the overwhelming 7-0 that it's been portrayed by some people this morning.
Jonathan, there seems to be almost an element of smugness about Pep Guardiola in his post-match, talking about the decisions he's had to make, whether it's Foden or leaving out Mahrez, as you say, and these decisions coming up trumps. Like, he even referenced Bernardo Silva on the left as well. But certainly these calls he's making are working at the moment. And even, leaving De Bruyne out for a game and then him coming back in last night and having a game like he did and the impact on the game that he did. Clearly some of these decisions right now are working.
Yeah, I don't mind a manager saying, I got it right. Now, they get enough criticism when they get it wrong. So I'd far rather they sound slightly smug in explaining what they did than refuse to talk about it. So I don't really begrudge anybody that. Yeah, he got it right. I think the treatment of De Bruyne is really interesting, that the specific criticism he made that, yes, he's creating chances, but he's not holding the ball well enough. I think that is still, I mean, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about his paranoia about getting done on the break. And I think this issue of control is still the big issue for City. Because for all that now, that the talk this morning is, oh, Haaland, how can you possibly say he's made them worse? Well, I don't think it's a question of making them worse, but it's a question of making them different. So if you extrapolate from the 26 games they played in the league this season and assume they'll go on the same rate, they would score 94 goals. Well, last season they scored 99. So they added a great goal scorer and they're on course to score 5 goals fewer. Even more worrying than that, I mean, much more worrying than that, last season they conceded 26 goals. This season they're on course to concede 35. So they have become more open. And I think that's an understandable consequence of having a player like Haaland who needs the ball earlier. If you're playing the ball earlier, you're necessarily playing more risky passes. You're not set to deal with a counter should that ball be lost. And so I think it's interesting that that's the criticism that Guardiola is making, that he's saying, yeah, De Bruyne is still making these passes. He is still creating the chances. But the consequence of the speed with which he's playing those passes is that it leaves City a bit more open. He is giving the ball away a bit more. I think getting that balance right, the risk-reward element of it, I think that is still the issue that, that City haven't necessarily quite worked out yet, and it's something they're going through. And I think it's why we've seen some of their recent league games have been pretty stodgy. I mean, that game at Palace at the weekend, where, I mean, look, they were comfortably the better side, fully deserved the win, but it was a real grinding 1-0 from a game that in the past you might have expected them to win maybe 3 or 4-0. And I think they are still just trying to work out, how do you accommodate Haaland? How do you get the ball forward to him as quickly as he needs it while still retaining the capacity to deal with a potential counter-attack?
I'm not for a minute suggesting Man City aren't capable of challenging on a number of fronts, but when you look at the fact that they have, you know, the FA Cup still to play, the Champions League being an obsession for Pep Guardiola at this stage to win it with City, whereas Arsenal have, yeah, the Europa League, of course they want to win it, and a bit of silverware would be nice, but the Premier League is going to be their sole major focus, you'd imagine, between now and the end of the season. Are Arsenal at an advantage compared to Man City, do you feel, Jonathan, in terms of challenging on a number of fronts?
I mean, I think the advantage they might have is they get to play in the league this weekend, and if they win that, they're 8 points clear. And okay, they've played a game more. But what that means is, City obviously have the FA Cup game against Burnley this weekend. What that means is that City know they can't slip up. And I it's one of those things that shouldn't make a difference. But I think you talk to players and they always sort of say, I mean, partly they say, oh, we're just focusing on ourselves. But yeah, they also sort of let on that, you know, it's easier to play at the same time as the opponent because you're not sort of aware that, right, there's no space for slipping up here. I think it's easier to focus on your own game when you don't know what the opponent's done. So for Arsenal to get that 8-point lead, you know, in the same way that when Arsenal were only 2 points clear, even though they had a game in hand, that didn't feel anywhere near as secure as 5 points. Well, 8 points having played a game more feels a lot more secure than 5 points having played the same number. So if Arsenal win this weekend, I think that does add to their advantage, yeah.
The point you make about City still trying to work out exactly how to get the balance right between their risk of being more open and the goals that might come if they manage to unlock this, it's really interesting to watch that unfold in real time, because we are watching one of the world's great managers wrestle with the fact that he has this shiny new toy that he knows is really, really important if he can just make it work. And that's the challenge for him for the rest of the season. If he gets that right, then there's a good chance that they reach a Champions League final, and what happens in the night happens in the night. But I guess that's the big imponderable that we're going to be watching for every game, to see, has he tweaked it? Is he getting the balance more in favour of being able to hit last season's goal tally without conceding more? Are we watching a great experiment unfold before our eyes?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, the experiment maybe is not quite the right word, because that makes it sound a lot riskier than it is, but we are seeing a manager working through a problem. You know, a great manager, you're one of the greatest thinkers about football has ever been, working through an issue, and it's fascinating to see. And you can sort of, it's a real privilege to see it in real time. But right from the Community Shield, you could see, you know, it's very obvious that game, we're not getting the ball forward enough quickly enough. And then I think it was West Ham they played the first week of the Premier League season, and Haaland did get the two goals, and he did seem to be going forward a bit quicker. But then we've seen that's left them open, and opponents have started to work that out. You have to counter that. And we're still in that process of flux. And I think it's really interesting to see a manager like Guardiola sort of really wrestling with his principles. His principles are not to play those long balls, not to play those long passes. And yet he's being forced to do it. And you know, early on, the score was still 0-0 when it happens. I think it was probably 8-10 minutes in yesterday. And it was Nathan Ake played a pass, 60-70 yard pass over the top, and Haaland ran onto it and got a toe to it, and the keeper made quite a good save. And that's not the sort of chance that City would have been creating the previous 5 years that Guardiola's been there. So they have changed, and I guess it is a case of having this new weapon, a weapon that can really hurt opponents, that makes it really complicated for opponents, because if you sit deep, he'll win headers against you. If you push up, you'll hit the space behind you. But at the same time, it slightly disrupts the patterns and the passing flow and the domination of the possession, which has been City's characteristic, which has been Guardiola's characteristic right since he became a manager in 2008. And balancing those two things off. And I think Guardiola is such an ideological manager, and I think that's natural for somebody who came through at Barcelona. You've seen Xavi talking much the same way, that he has this idea, his strictures of football, his rules of football. It's sort of a quasi-religion that you cannot be heretical from this. This is the one true way of playing. And then he gets his other way of playing, and he's somehow having to adapt those principles. And there must be part of him that thinks, you know what, just whack it. If we're struggling a bit, whack it over top, whack it over the top. It doesn't have to be a good ball. You think of the goal they scored. Was it the third goal they scored against Villa? When Callum Chambers, under very little pressure, just heads the ball to nowhere and creates a chance just because a ball was within 20 yards of Haaland. You can do that. And yet Guardiola, all his footballing principles are telling him not to do that. So yeah, it's a fascinating thing to watch him working that through and trying to communicate that idea, his understanding of that, to his team. And De Bruyne is the most important player in that because he is the brains of the side. In a very intelligent side, he is the brains of it. And Guardiola clearly feels that De Bruyne's interpretation of that has slightly deviated from what he would like. And De Bruyne, at the same time, I think, has had a bit of a post-World Cup blip. Yeah, anybody who saw him at the World Cup saw how frustrated he was with the way Belgium played. That interview he gave after, was it after the Canada game when he got man of the match and was incredibly grumpy about being made man of the match? Say, I didn't deserve it. I was rubbish today. We were all rubbish. And I think he's come back with a bit of a sulk still on. And Guardiola's having to work through those issues of character and temperament as well. And that, I think, is not something Guardiola finds easy. I don't think he's the world's most natural man manager.
Jonathan, I, like many other football fans, like to pride myself every 4 years in watching as many World Cup matches as I possibly can, sitting down and soaking it all in. 2026, they're not making it easy, are they? I mean, what is it, 104 matches, 12 groups of four teams. So, I mean, the amount of football in 2026 is just going to be ridiculous. What are your thoughts on this extended tournament?
It's just gloom. I mean, a 39-day tournament, I think, is what they're talking about. It's a long, long time. I mean, look, I'm talking about this entirely selfishly to start with. As a journalist, a World Cup, and you have to go for a couple of days beforehand and you leave sort of a day or two afterwards. So the World Cup was already 5 weeks. Now it's going to be 6 weeks, maybe slightly more. That's an incredibly grueling thing. You work every day. You work 16, 18 hours a day. It destroys you. And you saw this World Cup, I'm only a journalist now, I shouldn't be doing this, but loads of journalists were ill and loads of journalists have struggled to recover post-World Cup. So God knows what it's like for players. Every tournament is getting bigger. Champions League, they're adding games to it. The World Club Championship, they're adding games to it. The Euros, have added games to it. The African Cup of Nations have added games to it. Players will break down. Journalists will break down. Nobody cares about that, but people will break down. But also 104 games, I find 64 games is just beyond my capacity. I'm very enthusiastic at the beginning of the groups. Towards the end of the groups, my enthusiasm wanes a bit, apart from those games that actually mean something. And of course, the problem is there are going to be far fewer of them because of the games that mean something. Because if you win your first two games, you're through. There's far less jeopardy for teams. So I hate the format. I think at some point you've got to stop expanding. You've got to say, look, I'm sorry, it's not for everybody. Some teams will not qualify. And there has to be an element that this is the elite. Now, you may want to rejig qualifying slightly and maybe you create more intercontinental playoffs. Maybe that's a way to sort of open it up so you get more African or Asian or CONCACAF teams there. That you don't have half the Commonwealth teams naturally getting through. Maybe there's scope to tweak that. But just make it bigger. I'm somebody who loves football, who makes money. The more football there is, the more money I make because I get paid to watch it and to write about it and think about it. And I'm approaching this with a sense of exhaustion. I think there are keen fans who will watch everything, but there's going to be a lot of fans who find, as with the Cricket World Cup, that their enthusiasm sort of sags a bit in the middle. And I think, there'll be a lot of people who end up, rather than trying to watch every game, just sort of think, I'll catch up with that later just because I don't have the bandwidth for this. Yeah. But my bigger problem is the eight best third place teams going through. I just think that takes away a huge element of the jeopardy. And, you know, it's also just the absurdity of the blatantness with which Infantino says one thing one day and another thing the next. It's all such obvious nonsense that, oh, Qatar was the greatest World Cup ever, but we're going to rip up that format and do something completely different. Well, if it was the greatest World Cup ever, just do the same thing again, rather than making it bigger, diluting it, bloating it, and just leaving everybody shattered.
Jonathan.
Great. So yeah, not looking forward to it.
Great to have you with us. Thanks a million. You were great with your time. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.
OTB AM with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now.